Welcome to the Foreclosure Hour, broadcasting weekly each Sunday from the Dubin Law Offices at Harbor Court in downtown Honolulu at 3 p.m. Hawaii Standard Time on News Radio 830 KHVH and on the iHeartRadio app across the nation and beyond. And here's Gary.
Good evening, depending on which time zone you're in. We're broadcasting from beautiful downtown Honolulu at the Dubin Law Offices under the auspices of KHVHAM Radio, being heard on iHeart Radio across the Internet. I'm your host, Gary Dubin, for this hour. First, I'd like to thank KHVHAM and Clear Channel Media and Entertainment for giving me this opportunity to be with you every Sunday. Clear Channel has 240 million monthly listeners in the United States and is actually the largest radio and TV outlet in America. I certainly appreciate their confidence in me, and I welcome all of you to our inaugural broadcast. I find this to be somewhat different as an attorney. I'm used to being in court or teaching before a live audience. Radio experience is a little bit different. I'm here in my office with Greg Ravello, who's the executive producer, and Bob Dickerson, who is helping us with the equipment. So I just hope and assume that somebody is listening. Let me start off by, first of all, saying how sorry we are regarding the floods that are taking place in Colorado. I had a wonderful experience myself in Colorado for 3 years. In the late 1980s, I taught at the University of Denver Law School and certainly came to appreciate the beauty and the people of Colorado. Today we're going to look at something a little bit different. What is a man-made disaster? Tomorrow, actually, on Monday, September the 16th, 2013, is the five-year anniversary of the start of the mortgage meltdown in the United States. Since then, more than 5 million homes have been lost in foreclosure. And the news reports are that we can expect that another 10 million homes are on the edge of foreclosure. Now, that translates, by my math, to 105 million people in the United States being affected by the foreclosure crisis, which is more than one-third of the entire United States population. Of course, that's only half the story, because as we know, the mortgage crisis shattered the entire American economy. That took 200 years to build up and somehow has been devastated by the mortgage meltdown. Now, if you look at the statistics from the federal government, you would assume that that unemployment has really declined. You would assume that for inflation is in check, when actually, if you look at the real numbers, you'd see it's quite different. The same thing is true in the mortgage crisis. There's really no end in sight. Don't believe what people tell you. Many of the homes that were, for example, refinanced with loan modifications are now coming back into foreclosure. It seems to be very much like an endless cycle. Now, it not only affects the poor, it's also affected the rich, who have had very large jumbo loans. But in particular, this kind of a economic crisis has been very hard for minority groups, making it even more tragic. So let's get started. Now, in the future, we're going to have guests, and we'll probably spend the first half hour talking to our guests, and then we'll open the phone lines to you, because this show is theoretically mine, but it's also yours. We want to hear from you. That's the only way we're going to solve the mortgage crisis, is to find out what's really going on in America. Now, I believe that you and I can make a difference. This is not going to be a regular talking blog on foreclosures. I'm going to shock you with some of the real facts that have not really been publicized. And I promise you, I'm going to offer some solutions that nobody has yet talked about, which I think really is the answer. And in doing so, we're going to take the foreclosure system apart piece by piece. And to do that, I'm thinking in terms of three basic objectives of this show that I'd like to share with you at this time. First, it's an issue of education. Not many people know what's really going on in every part of American life regarding foreclosure. We pick up bits and pieces, especially from the explosion of blogs in this area on the internet, and thank God for them. We wouldn't have any hope if it wasn't for the blogs. They should be in the Foreclosure Hall of Fame. And there's many of them. I don't have time to mention them all. But first thing we want to do is we want to share our experiences on this half hour. Secondly, we need better organization. I'm going to be suggesting how borrowers can organize in order to effectively deal with what is essentially a national problem needing national attention. Now, don't expect help from the federal government. We're going to find out on this show that part of the problem is the federal government. Believe it or not, I'm going to give you examples where the federal government has been not only acquiescent in the fraud that's taken place, for example, in American courts, but actually has been a ringleader in it. And then the third objective is we want to talk about reform. And on this show, we're going to talk about solutions that no one has heard about yet, because the system has been struggling, as you know, to find solutions to these problems. However, none of them so far have worked. Now, in the medical field, they're smarter than we are in the legal system. They look for vaccines. Rather than dealing with everybody's illness, they try to find ways of curing all of the problems in mass. And I'm going to suggest to you that in the legal system, there are certain things we can do that could act like vaccines. But in any event, let me begin by describing a little bit of my background so you know where I'm coming from and you can more easily judge my views. I became a member of the California Bar in 1963. Taught law for about 7 years. I used to go back and forth from Los Angeles to New York every other week for about 10 years, representing various clients. In 1982, I had got a marvelous idea of moving to Paradise, and I moved my law practice to Honolulu. Presently, I also have an office on the mainland in Newport Beach. I started out, my first law job was with Covington & Burling in Washington, D.C., which is kind of interesting because the press says that that's where the MERS idea was created. I suppose most of you know about MERS. Those who don't, you'll find out. But I didn't work on those kind of esoteric things. My first client was the National Football League. But in 1971, I got heavily involved in foreclosure defense. And at that time, things were really different. I remember in 1971, I represented a New Jersey business whose business factory was in foreclosure, the building was. And we fought it out with Chemical Bank, and the foreclosure department was really nasty. But when we got into the workout department, they were wonderful because they didn't care about the bank and they didn't care about the borrower. Their main concern was to protect the value of the property. And I actually got them to loan me $250,000 for the business, for the building to fix it up. At that time, the federal government was not that much involved in the mortgage business. And the banks, principally, it was, their depositors' money, and they were pretty much responsible for it. But the federal government came in. And it seems that every time the federal government comes in to solve a problem, it creates more problems. So I litigated through the savings and loan crisis, through the truth in lending crisis, and a couple of years ago, the securitization issues came up, and those are the big issues today. Now, if you need more details on my background, you can go to the Foreclosure Hour website. We just put it up yesterday, and you may have some difficulty finding it because I found out the Foreclosure Hour language is a little bit generic. But if you put in Dubin Foreclosure Hour, you'll find it much more easily. First, let me talk a little bit about the objective of, as I see it, of this Foreclosure Hour series on education. The key to resolving the foreclosure crisis are the judges. And many of you who have been in foreclosure, I'm sure, do not have a very friendly attitude toward judges. I don't think it's really true that most of the judges are corrupt. I think they're trying to do a decent job. But what's happened is we're dealing now with what people are calling a shadow banking system. And the truth of the matter is that nobody taught these things in law school, and the judges come from the lawyers. So that the judges really do not have a background in this area. And what they've been faced with are some persuasive law firms. At the start of the mortgage crisis, some of you may not know that the five big banks put together a $46.5 billion legal defense fund. And in fact, just last week, JPMorgan Chase announced in the media that they were increasing their part by $1.5 billion more, anticipating more lawsuits. Now, lawyers are normal individuals, and that's where the money has been. So the big firms have been defending the lenders. And to add to that problem, the borrowers, many of them, were defending pro se in the beginning. And they came up with the weirdest defenses imaginable, and they turned many of the judges off. Now, on this show, I hope the callers will not ask questions about these crazy defenses that have turned the judges off. Now, in my practice, I've come across many of these. For example, I've had clients that said because their name was copyrighted, the judges couldn't foreclose on them because they couldn't use their name in the foreclosure orders and judgments. In fact, we had a case here a couple of years ago where one judge on the Big Island with his wife went to close escrow on their new loan, and the escrow said, "I'm sorry, Judge, we can't do it because you've got something like a $50 million UCC lien on you." It turns out that one of the people who he issued a foreclosure decree on filed a lien against him because he had violated the copyright of their name. Well, that's just one example. I had another client who was in a bar one time, and he heard that admiralty law governed foreclosures. I can't imagine how. And he used that as a defense. I had another client who went into court and told the judge he didn't need me anymore. And the judge said, "Why?" And he said he paid his loan off. And of course the judge was really happy. And she said, "Well, can you have any proof of that?" And he said, "Sure." And he pulled out a paper and he said he paid it off with a promissory note that he gave his lender. And you've probably heard that old saying about jaws dropping. Well, this judge's jaw actually dropped when she heard that. Interesting, he came back to me a couple of years later after going through bankruptcy and apologized, and I handled the case and we actually got a settlement. One of the strangest cases of all is Justice Mahoney. I don't know if you listeners have heard of that, but even last week I got another notice about Justice Mahoney because he had a case in Minnesota. He had a trial, and the jury found after listening to witnesses that the Federal Reserve Board was all a bunch of crap, and therefore no one could foreclose in America. And that opinion was signed by Justice Mahoney. Now, I only wish that was true. I did some checking, and it turned out that about six months later, the Minnesota Supreme Court reversed that decision. It turned out Justice Mahoney was a justice of the peace. And although the mortgage that he invalidated was about a $3 million mortgage, Justice Mahoney's jurisdiction was up to a maximum of $100. And the plaintiff in that case was a Mr. Gray, who turned out to be Justice Mahoney's personal attorney. And just before the reversal, apparently Justice Mahoney passed away. So, and then finally, here in Hawaii, we get many people raise the defense of the Hawaiian Kingdom. And that has gone to such an extreme that they're trying to indict some of our judges here in Hawaii as war criminals. And by the way, that really goes over well if you're trying to impress the judges. Now, all these things are nonsensical. And please don't call in asking us about them. That doesn't mean the Hawaiian people don't have a legitimate claim, because in effect there's a great deal of evidence that the islands were stolen by the United States from the Hawaiians, and that's an issue that still needs to be addressed. And actually, in the late 1990s, I actually went to the World Court in The Hague, the International Court of Arbitration, and actually argued the case for the Hawaiian Kingdom, which I believe in. But you can't go to the extreme of trying to accuse our judges of being war criminals. The other problem we've had is that the court system is too expensive. People who are in foreclosure for many reasons have a hard time paying for lawyers. So the system has been skewed in favor of the lenders. Also, there are political issues. The banks, bless their soul, they tend to give campaign contributions one way or another to legislators. And of course, that's the way the system works. But finally, greed has taken over the American foreclosure system. Because of MERS, we've lost all accountability. Now, what do I mean by that? Well, in the old days, not too long ago, when you got a loan, the bank loaned you money, you signed a promissory note and a mortgage, the bank put the promissory note and the mortgage in the vault, and when you were done paying for it, they gave you your note back marked canceled, and they released your mortgage. But about 10 or 15 years ago, some people on Wall Street got a great idea. Why not securitize these mortgages? Why not put them in bundles and, just like stocks, sell shares to investors and create more money? Now, in actuality, it's not a bad concept because it frees up the banks so they can loan more money. But like everything else, it wasn't properly regulated. It got so big, maybe it couldn't be regulated. And they set up a shadow banking system so that they didn't record who owned the mortgages. Some think it was because they wanted to save the $30 or so filing fee every time they sold the mortgages. Some think they were just trying to hide it that way. But the net effect was that the states lost control of, since the Pilgrims landed in Plymouth Rock, had become a function of local jurisdictions to keep track of who owned title to properties. Presently, some people say that no one knows who owns most of the mortgages anymore. In fact, the shadow banking system recording of the mortgages informally got so confused that many believe they can't find actually who owns some of the mortgages. And not only that, but it appears like because they had so many notes that they shredded the notes so they wouldn't have to have the used warehouse full, and they digitized them in case they needed them. Now, that was a very foolish decision because the notes are negotiable instruments. And if you destroy them, you have lots of problems in how you're going to prove who owns the loan. And that's become a real problem. Now, there's been some litigation on the mainland where experts have argued that the lenders have been falsifying and photoshopping these original notes. And that's something we're going to get into. Now, in order to organize American borrowers, we have got to form some kind of an organization. And later on in the show, I'm going to tell you about what I'm proposing, what I call the Foreclosure Defense Club. But now we're going to take a slight break. Thank you.
From the CARE Channel Youth Center, I'm Tony Solis. Almost 100 school children and teachers left stranded for 2 days by the massive flooding that hit around Boulder, Colorado, were airlifted to safety on Saturday as the number of presumed dead rose to 6, with over 700 more missing. The students from Fireside Elementary School in Louisville, Colorado, around 10 miles to the southeast of Boulder, were trapped when floodwaters burst over roads and an outdoor education center in Jamestown. In more news, a college professor has died died on Saturday after being stabbed multiple times in the neck as he stepped in to save his girlfriend from a random attacker. Police said the couple were walking home after watching a Seattle Sounders soccer game match when they were attacked for no apparent reason. And in local news, in Wahiawa, a 33-year-old woman has been arrested on suspicion of first-degree assault on a law enforcement officer after police said she bit an officer while he tried to arrest her for operating a vehicle under the influence. The police officer suffered minor injuries. And lastly, an estimated 300,000 gallons of treated wastewater spill was reported at the Pearl Harbor Naval Facilities Engineering Command, authorities said Saturday. According to the Clean Water Branch of the State Department of Health, the fully treated and UV disinfected effluent bypassed the sand filtration unit of the NAVFAC wastewater treatment plant and was discharged into Mamala Bay about 1.5 miles offshore at a depth of 150 feet. And now your local forecast. Today it's going to be sunny but with scattered clouds with a high near 88 degrees. Easterly winds around 11 miles per hour. Tonight it's going to be mostly clear but with a low around 71 degrees and easterly winds from 9 to 11 miles per hour. From the Clear Channel News Center, I'm Tony Solis.
This is your part of the show. Please call 808-521-8383. Toll free, 888-565-8383. If all lines are busy, please call back again later. Gary is inviting you to become a charter member of his National Foreclosure Defense Club, an exclusive public service for our regular listeners, who will each receive by email a copy of all cases and materials mentioned on the show each week for a very nominal annual introductory reduced charter member fee of $100. Good until October 15th. You can join Gary and your friends today by sending your one-time annual payment and email address to the Foreclosure Hour, Suite 3100, 55 Merchant Street, Honolulu, Hawaii, 96813. Become a part of the show today. Foreclosures are looming everywhere. Now, the Foreclosure Hour, a national foreclosure radio talk show, is here to help. Tune in every Sunday at 3 p.m. on News Radio 830 KHBH and on the iHeartRadio app as your host, Hawaii attorney Gary Dubin, invites you to call in. Learn how others are defending against foreclosures. Call in to share your own experiences. You cannot afford to miss a single show. Sunday at 3 p.m. on News Radio 830 KHBH. Welcome to the Foreclosure Hour, broadcasting weekly each Sunday from the Dubin Law Offices at Harbor Court in downtown Honolulu at 3 p.m. Hawaii Standard Time on News Radio 830 KHBH and on the iHeartRadio app across the nation and beyond. And here's Gary.
Okay, we're back again. And I just wanted to get into make you a few promises. If you listen to all of our shows, I would say by the end of the year, you're going to have a PhD in foreclosure defense, because you're going to get behind the crisis to the real crisis. The problem with the mortgage crisis is, it's been looked upon as class warfare because the majority of people are still, however desperately, are still paying their mortgage on time. And naturally, they begin to feel like, oh, why should the government bail out somebody who hasn't paid their mortgage? What I'm going to demonstrate to all of you is that it's not class warfare. That everybody's mortgage has a problem in the United States, and the solutions will benefit everybody. Now, what is the crisis behind the crisis? Well, first of all, we know that because of the mortgage meltdown, many borrowers got into trouble. In many cases, it's not their fault. Because when the house next to you goes into foreclosure, well, your property value goes down. And that hurts your ability to refinance. So many borrowers who got into trouble, it wasn't because they overextended themselves. It's because of the greed that resulted in a lot of mortgages being given to people who couldn't afford it. But that was the first wave, the borrowers. The second wave of problems became the pensions. Police, firemen, school teachers' pensions started to suffer because the holdings in the pensions began to decline. The third wave now we're seeing as the cities. Some of the cities are going into bankruptcy. Why? Because the tax base has always been, the real estate tax base in jurisdictions has been one of the ways that school districts, et cetera, have been financed. And city budgets have been financed. Many say the fourth wave is going to be bankruptcies of the states. There are a number of states that are on paper in great trouble because they have unfunded liabilities. What I'm going to suggest to you is that the final part of the foreclosure crisis that hasn't happened yet, and the most significant part is that the federal government naturally will be looked upon to bail everybody out. And you can imagine what that means. That's going to mean the end of federalism in this country. We will have a central government that will have bailed out the states after, as we're going to show here on this program in the coming weeks, the federal government that actually is in many ways responsible for the mortgage crisis, or maybe principally responsible, is now going to act like Santa Claus and bail the states out with the money that they've taken from the state taxpayers. In fact, the foreclosure system can be well described as a weapon of mass destruction. There isn't an aspect of American life that's not been affected, and it was all so unnecessary. The big mistake was the federal government bailing out the banks rather than bailing out the people. Now, we're going to talk about, in subsequent shows, two new ideas that have never been presented to the American people before. You won't find these anywhere. First, we're going to suggest that the main problem is the mortgage form itself, which we've used since the 15th century, that the mortgage form itself is inconsistent with human existence. Nobody can go 30 years without loss of a job, death in the family, illness. And as you build up equity, the foreclosure system is going to destroy your equity because your home is going to be sold one way or the other in a forced sale. And what I'm going to propose in the weeks ahead is a new mortgage form, which I call HAT, Homeowners Adjustable Trust. And the advantage of this is this mortgage is going to have a couple of buttons. You can push a button and take a year or two off from making payments. You can push another button and become a renter with an option to buy back to protect your equity. It's a flexible form of mortgage or trust deed for those states that instead of mortgages have trust deeds. And that's all you would need to protect the equity of the properties. But here's the best thing about it all. It can be done without the federal government being involved. Private enterprise could set up homeowner mortgage trusts, because if homeowners got into trouble with their mortgage, the trust would have the equity in the property safeguarded. So there's an incentive for the private sector to come in and provide this kind of flexibility. Had we had this kind of flexibility 5 years ago, I'm going to suggest to you, there would have never been a mortgage crisis. So in coming shows, we're going to try to develop this concept. And it seems to make sense to everybody I've talked to. In other words, we're dealing with a mortgage form which, contrary to human existence, has built-in disasters for everybody. Okay, let me go to the second idea we're going to talk about on this show. Okay, before I go to the second idea, I understand we have a caller. The caller is Carol Kayon from Indiana. Okay. Go ahead, Carol.
Hello.
Yes.
I can barely hear you. Can you hear me?
I'm going to turn my volume up so I can hear you. I can hear you, yes.
Okay.
Okay.
No, you have some really good ideas. And I agree with you about the federal government bailing out the banks instead of the people. I had a question about the 10 to 15 years ago. You said they started securitizing these loans. Do you think that maybe a group of people planned this, or it's a possibility that this was planned, this what I'm claiming is a mill, a system they planned, pre-planned to bring down everything? Do you think that that could be a possibility?
Carol, yes, of course, that is a possibility. From my own experience, I can tell you that in the 50 years I've been involved in the legal system, I've seen a lot of corruption. But it's not the majority of the people in the system. My own personal opinion would be that it made some sense in the beginning. It got out of control. The federal government just can't regulate these kind of institutions. And there was just no regulation.
Well, I'm still struggling to hear you, and I apologize. I think I heard what you said. I have found something in, I was trying to help defend my daughter against a foreclosure.
Yes.
And I discovered that the title companies are backdating the title policies by a number of years to go in line with the TIF tax. Are you familiar with the TIF tax?
Well, I can tell you what happened was the foreclosure crisis caught everybody in a big problem. The title companies in particular were facing bankruptcy. So everybody's been involved in an incredible cover-up. And I'm not familiar with the tax you're talking about, but I do know that there is an underlying problem still with the title companies.
Well, I have documents that show that they backdated a title policy in the potential buyer's name. Now, when they do that, that changes the role. When they sit down at the table to execute the documents, the buyer becomes the seller. And that is Metropolitan's life demutualization process. So they demutualized back in 99.
Well, if you
and they developed a program called the buy and sell and sell and buy. And I just wasn't sure if you were aware of that.
No, I'm not. And I'd love to see that documentation if you care to send it to me.
No, I cannot hear. He sounds very like maybe two rooms away.
Oh, well, I'm sorry about that.
That's okay.
This is our opening show, and we'll get all the production problems resolved.
Well, it's just something to look at because they usually will put your insurance policy the day before you're signing, so people probably need to check their policies. Say if you signed on the 14th, if your insurance policy was issued on the 13th, then you were probably a victim of this.
Wow. That certainly wouldn't surprise me.
I sent an email to him with my contact information because there's much more involved here. It seems that the city's incorporation.
Yeah. Well, Carol, please let us have your information.
Well, I sent you an email. I don't want to broadcast it over line. My contact information, my phone lines have been going down for a number of messages.
We'll get it and we'll contact you. Thank you so much.
You're welcome.
Okay. Let me go on, if I can, to the second new idea that we're going to be talking about on this show. The jurisdictions have been struggling with what to do about these mortgages that are killing its tax base. And as you know, the city of Richmond has come up most aggressively with this concept of eminent domain, which actually was started in, I believe it was San Bernardino County in California, where they started to talk about it. I don't think that eminent domain is going to work. Condemnation is not really designed for this kind of problem, and it's just going to make the lawyers richer and create a lot of litigation, and I don't think it's going to go anywhere. But I have another idea. Listen closely. Most of these mortgage-backed securities, they have difficulty proving who owns them. And we'll get to the problem of the judges in a minute or on other shows. But what's happening is that they're having a hard time showing who owns these notes and mortgages. So my plan is to create a uniform recording statute, a new way of recording mortgages. And I call it the Mortgage Integrity Act, otherwise known as MIA, which maybe the lenders will call Mamma Mia. And what it does, it requires that all mortgages and mortgage assignments be re-recorded with proof of ownership. And, of course, there'd be a nice fee to do that, maybe $5,000 or so, depending on the size of the mortgage. And if they can't prove who owns it to the satisfaction of a mortgage court in every jurisdiction, trained judges, thank God, then we use the common law concept of escheat. Escheat is an old concept. If you have a bank account, there's a bank account and local bank, and nobody claims it after so many years, it automatically goes to the state and becomes the property of the state unless somebody can prove they own it. So the Mortgage Integrity Act would result in mortgages being re-recorded or going into a junk pile and owned by the state. And then the state could cut the balance in half and give half of it to the and could give it back to the borrowers, and everybody would be extremely happy. Also, the Mortgage Integrity Act would require that copies of notes be recorded. And that's the killer, because whoever holds the note or owns the note owns the loan and the mortgage. And they would not be so easily so able to transfer these loans in any kind of shadow banking system. Now, this would have an extraordinary political effect upon the country. This is not a political show, so I leave this to others. But the $17 trillion that the United States government owes, a good part of that is based on holding not gold anymore, but mortgage-backed securities. And many of those mortgage-backed securities are worthless. So if the states were to adopt a Mortgage Integrity Act, and these mortgage-backed securities, ownership of it could not be identified and would escheat to the state, well, I leave it to you to conclude what would happen to American federalism and whether the states would be back in control again. In any event, these are issues that we certainly need to explore, and I think even by raising these new ideas, we're going to contribute to the resolution one way or another of the mortgage crisis. Now, in future shows, we're going to take the entire foreclosure system apart. The loan origination process, where they sit you down with a whole stack of papers that nobody expects you to read and have you sign. This is a clear example of the genius of the federal government. And then there's problems in the loan administration, of course, problems in default. And then when they get into the court system have become essentially, by and large, collection agencies for crooks. Now, there are courts that have figured things out. We know, for example, we're going to talk on future shows about the Golaski case out of a court of appeals based in Fresno in California, where court decided that a borrower can question the validity of the assignment of the mortgage. And what could be more basic than that? A question of standing. Somebody's going to foreclose on you. They should be able to show that they own the mortgage and the note in the first place. However, that's not the law in the United States. So far, you've only got a couple of courts that have held that way. For example, the Fifth Circuit Court of Appeals, it's a federal court, in Reinigan versus Deutsche Bank National Trust Company, on July 11, 2013, this year, held that a borrower cannot challenge the standing or the authority of an assignor of a mortgage, that only the assignee, the one who assigned it, can. That decision was written by Judge Patrick Higginbotham. Now, Judge Higginbotham is a very respected judge. He's not stupid at all. But the question is, how in the world could he come out with a decision like that? He actually wrote the opinion. There would have been a panel probably of three judges. And that's one of the things we're going to explore. How can these judges differ on such fundamental issues that are not related to their particular jurisdiction? But I have I have another caller on the line from Texas. My prompt says Dreamlin. So, are you there, Dreamlin?
Hello?
Yes. I can hear you.
Yes. Okay, I can hear you through my speaker, but not through the phone.
Okay. Do you have a question?
Okay. Yes, I do. I closed with AmeriQuest Mortgage, and I'm not sure if you're familiar with AmeriQuest.
Oh, I'm very familiar with AmeriQuest.
But they were sued by the Attorney General, and my my servicer is Auckland, and they tell me that they are collecting a debt for AmeriQuest Securities, Inc. So there is no lender, that my mortgage is going to AmeriQuest Securities, Inc., which is the securities, yet there is no lender. And this, I have been paying to AmeriQuest Securities, Inc., which I just discovered in August, for 10 years. And in the meantime, I have found a HUD-1 statement, a HUD-1 form with a forgery on it.
Well, I believe AmeriQuest went into bankruptcy, and AmeriQuest Securities is probably the entity that came out of bankruptcy. And it's not surprising to hear about forgeries because, you know, in my practice, I've come across what have been proven to be many forgeries. Sometimes the mortgage broker is very anxious to close, and just signs the paperwork to get his money. Sometimes they actually switch documents. And obviously you need an attorney in Texas. And if you want to send us an email and some attorney in Texas wants to do the same, we could put you in touch. One of the things we hope to do on this show is to help put lawyers and borrowers together in various states.
Well, that's wonderful. I appreciate it. What I was told by an attorney, and actually a couple of attorneys, is because I have been in my home 10 years, and there's a statute of limitation, and there is basically nothing I can do.
Well, I suggest you go to another attorney. Because apparently a lot of times that means that the attorney you contacted doesn't know what to do. But there, if for example, in the mortgage field, in fraud, there are discovery statutes in most states that extend the statute of limitations. In any event, I understand that we're just about done with our first foreclosure hour. We have just 1 minute to go. Dreamland, thank you for calling. Many more things we have to talk about. We're going to have guests in the future. You won't have to listen to me pontificate as much. I need to figure out how we can get judges and state legislators to listen to this show, because that's the audience that we need. They need to hear from all of you. And I can thank you very much for listening to our inaugural show. And I'm sorry if we had a couple of production problems, but we'll tackle them as we go. Thank you so much.
Join us again next week for the Foreclosure Hour, broadcasting weekly each Sunday from the Dubin Law Offices at Harbor Court in downtown Honolulu at 3 p.m. Hawaii Standard Time on News Radio 830 KHVH and on the iHeartRadio app across the nation and beyond.
Glenn Beck, sending you a message.
Weekdays at 4.
It's all going to be good.
KHVH Honolulu.